Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway Studio in East County. Today, we open our show by extending our sympathies here at East County Magazine and KNSJ to the victims of the shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando, one of the worst mass shootings in modern times in the United States. We also have some disturbing information on a threat of violence against San Diego's LGBT community made on Craigslist. In addition, we'll give you some tips on how to help children cope with news reports on tragedies such as the Orlando massacre. Fire weather is here. Expect a triple-digit heat wave this weekend, and Cal Fire has issued a burn ban. We'll have details. If you visited the San Diego Zoo's Safari Park recently, listen up. A bat found in a public area there has tested positive for rabies, and we've got some news that you should know from the County Health Department. Our newsmaker interviews today are with representatives from Nile Sisters, a local nonprofit organization that helps refugees and immigrants. We'll be speaking with founder Elizabeth Liu, as well as Weister Gaitan and Saharo Noor, about how Nile Sisters helped them when they were refugees and how they are now giving back to help others. On Destination East County, we'll have all the hottest events coming up across our region, from KNSJ's own Bohemian Bash to 4th of July festivities and much, much more. And then from Public News Service, learn about a filibuster by senators seeking to enact restrictions on assault weapons in the wake of the Orlando shootings. Then on Green Scene, learn how some local students at Helix High School are helping to restore sea bass in our ocean. Next up on sports, Liz Alper will have the latest good news for Aztecs track and field athletes at San Diego State, including one who is Olympic bound. On Vines and Wines, we'll be re-airing our interview with Don Rutkoff, and we'll have some news for local farmers about drought loans now available on our agricultural report. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Hundreds turned out at a memorial in San Diego and Hillcrest earlier this week to commemorate victims in a mass shooting last weekend at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. The massacre has prompted outpourings of sympathy across the nation and here in San Diego. 29-year-old Omar Mateen, a U.S. citizen and son of Afghan immigrants, killed 50 people and injured 53 others. The crime is being investigated by the FBI as both a terror act and a hate crime. The gunman called 911 and pledged allegiance to ISIS, the Islamic State, before the massacre, the FBI has indicated. Mateen worked as an armed guard for a security firm. He has twice been questioned by FBI agents in the past for suspected terrorist ties, but was cleared. Just days before the attack, he purchased an AR-15-style assault weapon and a handgun. A SWAT team ultimately knocked out a wall, and law enforcement officers risked their lives to enter the nightclub and rescue numerous people, also killing the gunman. Mateen's wife has said he was mentally ill and that her family rescued her after Mateen beat her and held her against her will. The shooter's father has said Mateen became enraged after seeing two men kissing in Miami, but he voiced shock at his son's violent actions. In a separate incident, Santa Monica police found possible explosives, weapons, and ammunition in the car of a man from Indiana who told an officer he wanted to harm a gay pride event in Los Angeles last weekend, the Santa Monica police announced on Twitter. It is unknown if either the Santa Monica or Orlando suspects were working directly for ISIS, though ISIS has claimed after the shooting that Mateen was a member of ISIS. President Obama ordered flags nationwide flown at half-mast to honor the victims. He called the shooting an act of terror that served as a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us. The president also noted that the tragedy again shows how easy it is for someone to purchase assault-type weapons that can slaughter people in a school or a house of worship or a movie theater or in a nightclub. We have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be. Obama stated. Congress has repeatedly blocked the president's efforts to restrict access to assault weapons or require background checks for gun purchases. A ban on assault weapons was originally backed by Republican President Ronald Reagan and later enacted but repealed under President George W. Bush in 2004. Since the repeal, the number of mass shootings has skyrocketed across America. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump sent out a tweet reading, "Appreciate the congrats for being right on radical Muslim terrorism. I don't want congrats. I want toughness and vigilance. We must be smart." Hillary Clinton's campaign responded with this statement. "Hillary Clinton has a comprehensive plan to combat ISIS at home and abroad, and will be talking to the American people in the coming days about steps she would take to keep the country safe." In contrast, Donald Trump put out political attacks, weak platitudes, and self-congratulations. The Clinton campaign said Trump has offered no real plan to keep our nation safe and to outreach to the Americans targeted. Just insults and attacks. In times of crisis, more than ever, Americans are looking for leadership and deserve better. In California, Governor Jerry Brown issued the following statement. "We stand with the people of Orlando and the entire LGBTQ community in solidarity against these acts of hatred." In San Diego, vigils organized by the LGBT Community Center drew large crowds, with hundreds gathering at the Hillcrest Pride flag. San Diego Police Chief Shelley Zimmerman offered hearts and prayers for all those affected by the mass shooting in Orlando. Chief Zimmerman added that, as a precaution locally, law enforcement has increased its security posture in the city, focusing particularly in mass gathering locations. She added, "We want all San Diegans and their guests to feel safe." She also urged people to report any suspicious activity. San Diego's Republican Mayor Kevin Faulkner sent this message on Twitter, "San Diego stands united with the people of Orlando. Our sincere condolences to the families affected by this horrible act of violence." San Diego City Councilman Todd Gloria, a Democrat and openly gay member, indicated he reacted with shock, tears, and anger, Times of San Diego reported. He added, "Words fail when trying to comprehend the attack on Orlando's gay bar. Ask San Diegans to keep victims in your heart." In Orlando, the community turned out to offer overwhelmingly support to victims of the mass shooting. People lined up for over a mile to donate blood. Restaurants offered food and makeshift memorials with flowers swiftly formed. A GoFundMe page has been set up for donations to help survivors and families of victims of the Orlando mass shootings. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
ABC 10 News is reporting that a post in the personal ad section on Craigslist showed a revolver being fired with a message threatening San Diego's LGBT community with violence. The post claimed that the Orlando mass shooting at a gay nightclub was long overdue and contained slurs against the local LGBT community. The post also thanked God for AIDS, 9/11, and Orlando, stating, "San Diego, you are next." The post, reported by a 10 News viewer who took a screenshot of it, has since been removed by Craigslist. San Diego police are reportedly investigating. The FBI has indicated that despite that post, there are no known specific credible threats against targets here in San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Anxiety, fear, and sadness. Events like the Orlando mass shooting can generate strong emotions, especially in children. The County of San Diego's Deputy Director for Behavioral Health Services, Dr. Pavel Garcia, offers advice on how to talk to children and cope with violent events such as the Orlando tragedy. Parents should be aware of their children's responses and ready to talk openly. Each child handles stress differently depending on their age, maturity, and what they've seen on TV or other media. You don't have to provide too many details. Parents should monitor how their children are doing and acknowledge that it's okay to feel worried and sad. Some children may complain of stomach aches or not want to go to school, or they may want to talk about the incident. These are all normal reactions to a stressful situation. Garcia recommends that parents limit children's exposure to news media, smartphones, or other sources of news about such tragedies, since constant exposure to disturbing information can generate more anxiety. The media may show distressing images, but parents should emphasize to children that the event has ended and reassure them that they are safe. Answer children's questions simply, without dramatizing the incident. Provide perspectives explaining that these incidents are not a common occurrence. Provide emotional support. It may take minutes, hours, or even days for the incident to affect some children. When it does, provide hugs, empathy, kindness, and calm support. And ask children about their thoughts and feelings. Adults should also be aware of their own stress levels and try to stay calm. Children look to their caretakers and parents for a sense of security and safety. Adults should talk to another adult about what they're feeling, too. Keep doing daily family activities together. Some children's sleep, appetite, and social interests may be disrupted. If these problems last more than a few days, you can call the family doctor or the county's Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240. At the Crisis Line, trained counselors are available 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, to help people with depression, anxiety, anger, or other mental health challenges. That number again is 888-724-7240. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a public service announcement from CAL FIRE. While recent rains this winter and spring have been a welcome sight in California, drought conditions continue to increase fire danger in the region. That's prompted CAL FIRE to suspend all burn permits for outdoor residential burning within the state responsibility areas of San Diego and Imperial counties. Effective immediately, this ban prohibits residential outdoor burning of landscape debris such as branches and leaves. CAL FIRE and County Fire Chief Tony Meacham says, San Diego lives with the threat of wildfire year-round, and it is critical that the public do their part to be extra safe when outdoors. CAL FIRE Director Chief Ken Pimlott advises, as conditions across California are drying out further, we must take every step to prevent new wildfires from sparking. Residents must ensure they have defensible space by removing dead trees and overgrown vegetation from around their homes, but do so safely. Since January 1, 2016, CAL FIRE and firefighters across the state have already responded to over 1,700 wildfires that have burned nearly 30,000 acres. In the CAL FIRE San Diego unit, firefighters have responded to over 75 wildfires. While outdoor burning of landscape debris by homeowners is no longer allowed, CAL FIRE is asking residents to ensure that they are prepared for wildfires by maintaining a minimum of 100 feet of defensible space around every home. Here are some tips that can help prepare homes and property. Clear all dead and or dying vegetation 100 feet from around all structures. Landscape with fire-resistant and fire-retardant plants. Find alternative ways to dispose of landscape debris like chipping or hauling it to biomass energy facilities. The department may issue restricted temporary burning permits if there is an essential reason due to public health and safety. Agricultural land management, fire training, and other industrial-type burning may proceed if a CAL FIRE official inspects the burn site and issues a special permit. The suspension of burn permits for residential landscape debris does not apply to campfires and organized campgrounds. For additional information on how to create defensible space, as well as tips to prevent wildfires, visit readyforwildfire.org.
This is Chisato Iverson with a health alert. A bat at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park has tested positive for rabies, the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency reports. If you visited the safari park recently, here's what you should know. The bat, which is not one of the park's animals, was found at the Oasis Deli in Nairobi Village on Saturday at 11:30 p.m. It was carefully collected by the park staff and delivered to the county on Monday, where it tested positive for rabies. No human or animal contact has been reported. If you or someone in your family or group had contact with the bat, you are urged to contact the county as soon as possible at 619-692-8499. Rabies transmission can occur from a bat bite or if a bat's saliva comes in contact with a cut or abrasion or by touching the bat, then having contact with the eyes, nose, or mouth. If direct contact with the bat does occur, wash the affected area thoroughly with soap and water and seek medical advice immediately. Rabies in humans can be prevented by avoiding contact with wild, stray, and unknown domestic animals, ensuring pets are up to date on rabies vaccinations, and receiving prompt medical advice following animal bites and other significant exposures.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, I am delighted to have some very special guests from Nile Sisters, which is a San Diego-based organization helping local refugees. My first guest is Elizabeth Liu, founder of Nile Sisters. Elizabeth was recently honored by the United Nations with the Eleanor Roosevelt Award for her work, and she has been inducted into the San Diego County Women's Hall of Fame. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I understand that you have a wonderful event coming up this weekend. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. Nile Sisters is hosting an event. This event will be on June 18th, and it will be at Liberty Station in Women's Museum of California from 5:30 p.m. up to 8. And we are showcasing the diverse community we are serving.
Okay. The event is called Sand to Sea, and it is a benefit to help support the wonderful work that your organization is doing, correct?
Correct. That is 100% correct.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about that good work. Can you tell us the mission of Nile Sisters, please?
Nile Sisters is a community-based organization, 501c3, founded by Elizabeth Liu since 2001. And our mission is to educate, support, train refugees and immigrant women to become self-sufficient.
Very important. It's certainly a struggle, I know, for many of these women coming over here. If you can imagine what it's like to have fled a war-torn country or a place where you're facing persecution and coming all the way around the world to a place where maybe you don't speak English, don't understand the cultural differences. You went through this yourself, Elizabeth, as a refugee, I understand, from the Sudan. You came here in what, 1999?
Correct. The struggle is real. When a refugee gets to United States, to get started with life from scratch. I mean, getting to know the locality, to get to know people, make friends, and get services. Beginning skill you can use or sell here in United States. First, get to learn how to drive and drive on freeway. Get healthcare services and get jobs. These are not easy, including getting schools for your children, to understand the language, to get the resources you need to start life from scratch. These are the struggles refugees go through.
So what are some of the services that Nile Sisters offers to help these women?
As I overcame the barriers myself, now, Nile Sisters is providing certified nursing assistant training, childcare, home-based childcare business, and we also train those who do not have a driver's license with the driving so they can become good drivers and drive on freeway and also be able to help their families that way.
How many people do you serve each year, Elizabeth? And how many different countries are they coming in from now? I understand San Diego is a major sort of hub for refugees coming from around the world, receiving more in some years even than New York and Los Angeles now. A lot of people don't know that.
Yes. Over the past 3 years, we have served more than 5,000 refugees.
Wow, that's a lot.
And last year alone, we have served 1,600. The people we serve come from across the globe. We have refugees from Africa, from the war-torn countries of Africa. We have refugees from Burma, from Middle East, Iraqi, Afghanistan, Syria. We have also immigrants from Haiti. Our recent large number of people we serve. Across the border, we have immigrants from Mexico as well. We serve everybody who is in need of our services.
Very good. And now we have one of those recent Haitian immigrants with us today who is also working for Nile Sisters. I would like to introduce Rister Gaetan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to be with you, and it is a blessing.
Tell us what you do for Nile Sisters and how your work is helping make this pathway easier for the new refugees and immigrants that are coming here.
I think the day would not be enough to explain, our involvement with Nile Sisters. But just before I get to that, I'll just tell you, as you mentioned, I am from Haiti, and I am actually someone who in the past received Nile Sisters assistance, my family and that. Now, when I get to the United States 5-6 years ago, I didn't know anywhere to go. I was like, it was just like a small, tiny boat in a big ocean.
Wow.
And when I met with, Nile Sisters organization, it made a huge difference in my life. And, you know, since they helped me to stabilize my life and take back what, you know, has gone. And I feel that it is a necessity to actually be involved and help changing people's journey as well. So, to direct to your question, what I do for Nile Sisters now is put our struggle in front of these people, let them know that we are struggling. A lot of time people don't really understand because they say, well, refugee all over. But in San Diego, that, like you mentioned, we have more refugee come in. We receive more refugees than any other state in the United States right now, just because we have the border right there. And we deeply involved with helping people to understand how the system works. Because a lot of time, it's just not about money. It's about knowing where to go, what to do. So that's my involvement with Nile Sisters.
Yes, and I know that you mentioned to me before the show that it's about more than just seeking monetary donations from the public. How else can people get involved and help the organization to help these refugees and immigrants?
Many, many other ways. One of the things I've always tell my boss, Elizabeth, is that we can change people's life by giving them the smallest information they need to continue with their journey. Because there are some people we receive, these people, of course, they need housing, they need food, they need shelter, but they need someone to actually drive them around because they don't know how to drive. Or they need someone to say, hey, you can still be successful although you speak another language.
So mentors and volunteers.
That's right.
Yeah, that one-on-one help is so important. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Rister. And now I'd like to introduce our third guest for today, Sahara Noor, who is a refugee herself who came here from Somalia in 1994. Sahara, thank you very much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you very much. I'd be one of the one you interviewed today. I'm happy to see you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. Tell us how Nile Sisters helped you when you first came to America.
Nile Sisters is an organization who helping all the African immigrant or refugees, anything they need, like when they need resources, when they need where to go, and learning about the driving school because they're struggling, that, and the way Nile Sisters helping the woman, especially the woman, they motivate for the woman to get their goal, to set up their goal, because, they, speak other language and they have barbarian language and they have fear of the other country. When you come, it's not easy. It's so hard to catch up or to adjust it that way. So she helped in many ways, to helping about learning the little business like childcare or nursing assistant, that's helping to women to get their goal. Also, she helping to driving in a freeway and in everywhere, because in San Diego, they didn't have regular transportation.
Yeah.
Whatever you want. So I enjoy her.
So what are you doing now to give back through Nile Sisters yourself?
I am proud of her, what she have today. And also today I want to talk about diabetes too, which is the woman is they struggling in that way, because the diet over there back home, we walking a lot. We're not driving. We walking a lot. We're doing everything by hand, by feet. But here, we are struggling because every woman has a car driving. They forget about walking, exercising. So most of the women today, they have diabetes type 2, which is the diet is so different. The back home, we eat organic food, but here we eat chemical food. So we have a lot of things to change.
So do you work with the refugees here to help them improve the diet and go back to a diet that's closer to that organic food diet?
Yes. I helping the woman to change their diet, because a lot of women now, their obesity is each woman, each age, like younger age, obesity, the old woman obese. So we try to make a connection. We have some other African, we call in Somali Bantu, they have farm. Then they make organic fish. So they have Saturday and Sira High. They selling that organic features, so we make a connection. I go to the outreach and then I make a connection to buy that the organic feature to cook there and helping their family and their self.
Very good. It sounds like such a wonderful project that you're involved with, and I really want to thank you, Sato, for joining us today on the show. Elizabeth, back to you as the founder of Nile Sisters. Where can people go if they want to get more information about your organization, if they want to get involved, or if they're interested in getting tickets to come support your Stand to See event that's this Saturday, the 18th, to support Nile Sisters?
All the information they need for the event is on the website at nilesisters.org. And also they can come to our office at 6035 University Avenue, Suite number 22, San Diego, California, 92115. They can call us 619-265-2959. Or they can call my cell phone, 858-366-5527.
Very good. I want to thank all of you for joining me today. And listeners, we're also going to be back next week hearing from these same people who will be sharing their personal stories about surviving their journey here as refugees. I think you'll find it to be fascinating, so we hope you'll tune back in next week on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes a Bohemian Bash, Boars and Brews, an art exhibit at the League Horse Museum, and Gunsmoke Night with the Lions in El Cajon.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including outdoor movies, community concerts, and 4th of July festivities from small-town parades to firework extravaganzas.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
A Bohemian Bash will be held on Saturday, June 18th from 4 until 7 p.m. in La Mesa to benefit KNSJ, Public People Powered Radio, and the nonprofit East County Magazine. KNSJ needs help to cover repair costs from vandals that damaged the transmitter site on Mount Laguna. Festivities at this free-spirited summer solstice weekend gathering with artists, authors, musicians, and thinkers will support nonprofit media in the public interest, local news reporting, and coverage of arts, music, and culture. You can hear live musical entertainment, savor delicious foods and libations, enjoy comedy with Second Chances for Grace, hear poetry readings, watch San Diego Asian Artists Ensemble performers, and win fabulous prizes. Share your ideas, meet the media, and savor the hottest summer celebration. This very special event is open to members of KNSJ and subscribers of East County Magazine. For details on membership, location, and tickets, visit eastcountymagazine.org.
The Olaf Weghorst Museum in El Cajon has a new exhibit opening this week. Moments in Time features 24 pieces created by 6 artists and will be on display from June 15th through August 22nd. 4 of the 6 artists live in El Cajon, including Gloria Chadwick, Grace Schlesier, Dennis Ski Torzeski, and Denise Rich. The paintings by Chadwick, Schlesier, and Torzeski feature wildlife and landscape settings, while Rich specializes in bovine art. The 2 other artists specialize in wildlife and scratchboard artwork. Museum hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., Tuesdays through Saturdays. For more information on this exhibit, you can visit weghorstmuseum.org.
The El Cajon Valley Host Lions Club joins forces with the Winchester Widows to present their 6th annual Gunsmoke Casino Night on June 18th at 6 p.m. in the Pacific Southwest Service Center in El Cajon. You're invited to a night of mock gambling and carousing in an old Wild West saloon complete with Western music, complimentary food and drink. Plus, the Winchester Widows will help keep you cowpokes under control. There will also be a silent auction and 50-50 drawing. Proceeds will be used by the Lions Club to fund their student eyeglass program that provides free eye tests and glasses to needy students in the East County. The Widows support Challenge Ranch, which is a 10-acre ranch in Dehesa Valley that provides opportunities for underprivileged children through horseback riding. For more information, contact President Van Willey at 619-843-3214 or visit East County Magazine's events section at eastcountymagazine.org.
The Lakeside River Park Conservancy in Lakeside will host its 2nd annual Boars and Brew on Saturday, June 18th from 4 to 7 p.m. You're invited to sip and stroll along the banks of the San Diego River at this event, which drew over 600 guests last year and also includes tasty foods. Guests will receive a complimentary mug for tasting. Discounted rates are available for designated drivers. For tickets and details, you can visit lakesideriverpark.org. And now for a preview of coming attractions.
The City of La Mesa's Family Fun Outdoor Concerts at 6 series will be held once again in Harry Griffith Park each Sunday evening from 6 until 7 p.m. The series opened June 12th and runs through July 24th. Musical entertainment through the season will include Rhythm and the Method, Jazz West, Sonic Epidemic, Silver Mine, and the Big Band Ambassadors.
Movies and More by the Lake presents Lights, Camera, Beagle, the Peanuts movie on Friday, June 24th from 6 p.m. to about 9:30 p.m. at Santee Lakes. The cast of Young Actors Theater will perform songs from the movie, plus check out Lucy's psychiatric booth and batting practice on an inflatable batting cage. There will also be food, games, and plenty of fun. For more information, you can go to santeelakes.com.
Disney's The Lion King has captivated the imagination of audiences around the world, and now, for the first time ever, Christian Youth Theater San Diego has the opportunity to produce this one-of-a-kind musical on July 21st through 24th at the Helix Main Stage Theater in La Mesa. The African savannah comes to life on stage with Simba, Rafiki, and the unforgettable cast of characters as they journey from Pride Rock to the jungle and back again in this inspiring coming-of-age tale. For tickets, you can visit cytsandiego.org.
The City of La Mesa invites you to celebrate the grand opening of the Lookout at Legacy Park in La Mesa on June 29th at 6 p.m. in honor of La Mesa's centennial. You can also meet the artists for La Mesa's Centennial Project, which is located on La Mesa Boulevard in the heart of La Mesa's downtown village. For more information, you can call 619-667-1105 or visit the City of La Mesa's website.
The City of Santee invites you to Santee Salutes, an annual extravaganza set for Monday, July 4th from 2:30 until 10 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East in Santee. The festivities include live music, patriotic ceremony at 6 p.m., inflatable jumps and activities for kids, food available for purchase, and the spectacular fireworks display at 9 p.m.
Residents of Deerhorn Valley will hold a true Americana-style parade on July 4th, starting at 10 a.m. Residents of this rural community south of Jamul are invited to take a tractor, lasso a llama, hop on a horse, drive a donkey, walk with a wagon, jump aboard a jeep, or just walk on your 2 feet, festooned in patriotic red, white, and blue. The parade will include Clydesdale horses, an antique fire engine, and live drumming. Spectators are encouraged to bring flags, drums, rattles, and shakers. A picnic will follow until 2 p.m. with local crafter and vendor booths. You can purchase treasures from residents' barn cleaning also, or enjoy face painting as well as hot dogs, popcorn, and cotton candy available for purchase.
The City of El Cajon will hold its annual 4th of July picnic and fireworks at Kennedy Park on Madison Avenue. The fun starts at 1 p.m. with food vendors, kids' activities, and live music from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. The fireworks display will be held at 9 p.m. Arrive early for parking to find the best spot for your picnic and to view the fireworks.
The City of Poway invites you to bring your family and friends to Old Poway Park to celebrate our country's independence in turn-of-the-20th-century style on July 4th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. This event will feature patriotic entertainment, gunfighting reenactments, crafts, and old-fashioned games amid restored historic buildings and museums from the early 1900s. You can also take a ride aboard an old-fashioned train and savor tasty treats. An evening fireworks show with DJ will be held at nearby Poway High School on Espola Road. The gates open at 6 p.m. with fireworks starting at 9 p.m.
The Stars and Stripes will move down Main Street in Julian during this year's 4th of July parade, honoring Independence Day. For over 20 years, Julian residents, their friends, and parade lovers turn out to watch what some call the best little town parade in America. Pre-parade events start at 10 a.m. The parade begins at 12 noon and ends around 2 p.m. The Julian 4th of July Parade honors Stars, Stripes, and Pioneers in a homegrown event that celebrates the town's Gold Rush era history, the dedication of veterans and active duty military who serve our country, and local residents who cherish the special qualities of the little town tucked into the Cuyamaca Mountains east of San Diego. There is always a gang of local bad guys who try to rob the bank, but the sheriff rounds them up before the gunman can get away. This year, you can swing to the tunes of four bands, see the Mountain Tribal Gypsies dance down Main Street, honor World War II submarine veterans, salute Miss Julian and her entourage, and follow vintage aircraft flyovers. There will also be bunting, banners, flags, patriotic songs, equestrians, vintage vehicles, kids with animals, and the town firefighters greeted with cheers. After the parade, you can visit the Julian Women's Club Historic Quilt Show at the Julian Town Hall and stick around for a barbecue, music, and dancing at the American Legion just up the hill from the Town Hall on Washington Street. For more information, visit julianca.com and click on events.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like to add to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor our Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast. I'm Mike Clifford. Orlando shooting repercussions on today's nationwide rundown. We have reports on how the tragedy is impacting assault weapons, mosques, and gay pride events. Plus, the feds ramp up food assistance to Flint, and why some say the Elk River runs through West Virginia's future. Topping our news, that massive shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando has renewed efforts in Maryland to keep the state's assault weapons ban in place.
Maryland's landmark Firearms Safety Act of 2013 is currently being challenged in court. Attorney General Brian Frosch is speaking out after the Orlando nightclub massacre, vowing to fight it. He says there's no reason American citizens need assault weapons unless they're in the military.
We need to stand together as a nation to end the epidemic of gun violence. As President Obama has said, our thoughts and prayers alone are no longer enough.
A three-judge panel of the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit ruled these semi-automatic weapons and high-capacity magazines banned by Maryland's Firearms Safety Act are in common use by law-abiding citizens and don't fall under the exception to the right to bear arms that applies to unusual weapons such as machine guns and hand grenades. The National Rifle Association has applauded that decision, but Frosch vows to fight it to keep the ban in place. I'm Veronica Carter reporting.
A 15-hour filibuster led by Connecticut's Chris Murphy in the U.S. Senate appears to have accomplished its goal. Murphy says Republicans have agreed to hold votes on two gun control measures, including a proposal to bar anyone on a terrorist watch list from buying a gun. Meantime, Eric Tegedoff tells us that Muslim communities in the Evergreen State are feeling a backlash in the wake of the Orlando massacre.
Arslan Bukhari, executive director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations in Seattle, says mosques in Seattle and Redmond have received threats this week. He says law enforcement has responded to these threats.
Locally, one person apparently making threats online and buying weapons in order to attack a mosque. Thankfully, he was arrested and didn't go farther, and two mosques that received threatening messages.
Local law enforcement is investigating whether the man arrested yesterday for threatening the Idris Mosque in Seattle is connected to threats received by two mosques in Redmond.
Bukhari notes many thousands of Muslim Americans serve in the U.S. military, and there are more than 50,000 Muslim doctors in America. The tragedy in Orlando is not stopping upcoming gay pride celebrations across Colorado. Eric Gladys lets us know what's in store.
Denver Pride Fest is forging ahead with events scheduled for this weekend at Civic Center Park. Last year's festival and parade drew more than 365,000 people. Rex Fuller with the GLBT Community Center of Colorado, which organizes the event, says he expects the entire community to turn out.
It's important that we not allow this tragedy to scare us back into the closet. Pride celebrations really began as a way to say we need to be out and proud of who we are, and we're going to continue that tradition.
Vigils have been held throughout the state this week in honor of the Orlando shooting victims and their friends and families. Denver Pride Fest is one of the largest celebrations in the nation and generates $25 million in economic impact for the city.
Orlando was rocked by a second tragedy Wednesday when an alligator pulled a 2-year-old boy into a lagoon at Walt Disney World. Authorities say when they recovered the toddler's body, there were a few puncture wounds, so they believe the cause of death was drowning. Experts will attempt to determine if one of the four alligators killed after the attack was responsible. If not, they'll keep searching for the alligator that killed the boy from Nebraska. The U.S. Department of Agriculture ramping up its efforts now for those affected by the Flint water crisis. Mary Sherman has our report.
On Wednesday, the agency announced that it will provide a 14-pound food package to more than 17,000 low-income residents of the city. Agriculture Undersecretary Kevin Concannon explains that poverty in the area, combined with the adverse impacts of lead in the water, make it critical to ensure that families have access to nutritious foods.
There are foods rich in calcium, iron, and vitamin C that in particular have been researched to show they can help mitigate the impact of lead, to limit the absorption of it, to help excrete it as well.
The boxes will be available each month for 4 months starting in mid-September, when Concannon says Michigan's initial program to provide food boxes to families will have exhausted its financial resources.
And finally, as West Virginians consider their future, some say the Elk River runs right through it. Dan Hyman explains.
In part to build support for the Birthplace of Rivers National Monument, Adam Swisher and Matt Cairns hiked, biked, and paddled the entire Elk River in what they called the Elkspedition. Swisher is an outdoor guide from Wyoming. He says he was impressed and surprised during the 180-mile trip from the headwaters in what would be the National Monument downstream to Charleston.
It's actually a hidden gem in many ways. I see an opportunity for people to almost recreate the Elkspedition on their own. It's got so much going for it from top to bottom.
The birthplace would be made from Monongahela National Forest land already owned by the federal government. Advocates are in Washington now, pressing for what would be the state's first national monument, but they say time is short given Congress's election year calendar and the end of the presidential term.
The proposed monument would include about 125,000 acres in and around the Cranberry Wilderness. Support for Dan's report was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. That's our news for now. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Students from Helix Charter High School in Mesa released tagged juvenile white sea bass into local waters off Crown Point on Wednesday to help restore healthy population levels. The students are participants in Hub's SeaWorld Research Institute's Sea Bass in the Classroom STEM education program. Hub's SeaWorld Research Institute's research scientist and program coordinator Mike Shane delivered the juvenile white sea bass to Helix early this year. The fish were cultured at a Hub's SeaWorld fish hatchery in Carlsbad. From the 1950s to the 1980s, annual catches of white sea bass in California dropped from over 55,000 to less than 3,500. Partly as a result of that, in 1983, the Ocean Resources Enhancement and Hatchery Program Advisory Panel identified white sea bass as the most appropriate species to initiate this long-term research program. Thanks to private donor support, funding from public utility companies, and the ongoing support of sport fishers and sport fishing groups, this program has released more than 2.3 million fish. Adult fish have been recovered up to 15 years after release, some more than 350 miles from their release site. Helix is one of five San Diego school programs that have benefited from expanding of the Institute's Sea Bass in the Classroom program in the past year through public-private partnerships. The Sea Bass in the Classroom program incorporates a hands-on learning experience into school science curriculum coupled with field activities. The program teaches the students about aquaculture and stock enhancement as they grow, feed, tag, and finally release marine fish into local waters. Each fish is also tagged so that movement, diet, and survival information can be obtained from tagged fish caught in the future. Sea bass in the classroom is part of the Ocean Resources Enhancement and Hatchery Program, the result of an extraordinary partnership between California State Resources Agencies, public utility companies, sport fishing groups, and the scientific community to restore the depleted populations of recreationally and commercially important marine fish. The program is conducted in partnership with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and Get Inspired Incorporated. It is funded in part by Chevron, the County of San Diego, and San Diego Gas and Electric Company. Sports fishing fees also help to support this innovative program to help save sea bass for the future.
This is Liz Alper with a sports report. The U.S. Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association announced on Monday that six San Diego State athletes have been named All-Americans due to their performance at the last stop of the NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championship last week in Eugene, Oregon. sophomores Ashley Henderson and Simone Glenn and juniors Misha Ozen and Starlin Singleton all earned first-team honors in the 100-meter relay. Henderson earned first-team on the 100-meter dash and second-team accolades on the 200-meter dash. Ozen received honorable mention on the 100-meter hurdles. Junior Rachel Alisi and senior Alexa Evans were named to the second team discus. Singleton, Glenn, Ozen, and Henderson set a school record in the 100 with a time of 43:55 in the prelims on Thursday. Ozen's 13:27 time in the 100 hurdles prelims is the sixth fastest time in SDSU history. Henderson, meanwhile, has qualified for the U.S. Olympic trials in both the 100 and the 200.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
That's Greg Manis from Manis Vineyards here on East County Magazine Live. And we're going to introduce you to another very informative and what I feel is a very affluential person in the wine and vines industry movement. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Rutkoff. Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. Happy to be here.
Give our listeners a little story of what your life's all about.
Okay. I'm originally from the East Coast and moved to California like many people did, seeking fame and fortune in the early 1980s. And I lived in San Diego for a while. Got a degree in finance from San Diego State University. I moved up to the San Francisco area, and I got an MBA from San Francisco State University, and I worked for Bank of America for about 10 years doing budgets and financial analysis and risk management. I liked wine, and I thought, you know, I'm here in the Bay Area. Napa's not that far away, so why don't I see if I can go to work in the wine industry?
Now, did you do some specialty schooling and training in viticulture and AVA?
Yes, I was able to go back to school, and I took some of the seminars that they offer at UC Davis on sensory analysis and chemical composition of wine, and then I went to school in the classes at Napa Valley College. It owns 2 5-acre vineyards in the heart of Napa. We used to grow and sell grapes to Stag's Leap wine cellars, and the school offers 3 different AA degrees and about 30 or 35 different courses in the wine industry. So it's a very extensive program.
So you got a lot of information and a lot of training out of that. You have started a new career down here and got some of the colleges kind of buzzing. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're teaching these college-level classes about vines and the wines movements and the new ordinances?
Well, 2 years after moving here, I wanted to get a little bit more work under my belt, get more hours, and I thought, you know, San Diego looks like a pretty good place to grow, and it certainly is a place where people are drinking a lot of wine, and we have a big hospitality industry. So I called up my friend Steve, who runs the wine program at Napa College, and I asked him what he thought about the idea of taking some of the classes and transplanting them and using them down here, and he said it was an absolutely great idea. So I started sending emails and making phone calls to the 4-year colleges, but especially all the community colleges, in the hospitality programs, in the science programs, in agriculture, any different department I could think of that wanted to start teaching wine classes. That here I was, I've got 2 college degrees plus college education on top of that, and teach the science of viticulture, how the plants grow, why they are what they are, how to harvest them, selling, the business side of wine. And after, it took a little while, but finally got Cuyamaca College. Cuyamaca had actually called Steve at Napa College 2 weeks before I did and asked him if he knew of anybody that could teach down here. So when I called Steve, not only did he say it's a good idea, but he said, hold on a minute, let me dig up this email or phone call or whatever, and he put me in touch with Cuyamaca, and I got in touch with them and put together a proposal. It took about 5 or 6 proposals to finally hit the right one, the right match between what the continuing education program was all about, or what they needed from an instructor and what I could teach.
Right, and so you've taught a couple classes out there now. Your current program is about how to obtain boutique winery licensure and the bylaws and in-laws and legalization of all those different steps. Amazing stuff. What do you got planned for this upcoming fall? What's your next class?
We're going to teach 2 classes in the fall semester here at Cuyamaca. One is going to be Wines of the World, grab your passport. We're not going to be tasting, unfortunately, but we will be teaching people how to look at a French wine label, a Spanish wine, you know, Italian wine, how to look at it, how to read the label, how to understand what it is and compare it to a California wine. And then the second half of the fall session, I'm going to teach the business class again that I'm finishing up right now. It's called Creating a Successful Winery Business.
Nice.
And this class touches on federal law, state and local law, the county ordinance for having a tasting room, touches on sales and marketing, using the internet a little bit, and some accounting issues. So it's an all-around general purpose class, what's involved in being in the wine industry, what it takes to get started, and where to go.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Don Rutkoff. From all of us here at East County Magazine Live and Manus Vineyards, thanks for tuning in today. Don, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate the interview.
You've been listening to Vines and Wines with Greg Manus, proprietor of the Manus Vineyards Estate. Visit the website at manusvineyards.com.
An Amera Media production.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they seem hairy?
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. County farmers, ranchers, and businesses may seek some relief from the drought through two loan programs the county has announced. Eligible farmers and ranchers of family-sized farming operations may apply for a U.S. Department of Agriculture disaster loan for physical damage and crop production loss that's occurred since January 1st of this year. The maximum disaster loan amount is $500,000. The deadline to apply for the disaster loan is November 2nd. To apply, farmers can contact the Farm Service Agency by calling 661-336-0967, extension 2. This is not a grant, but rather a disaster loan for farmers and ranchers who were impacted by the drought. The Small Business Administration also has a disaster loan program for eligible small non-farm businesses, agricultural collectives, and private nonprofits. An example of a non-farm business impacted by the drought may be a farmer equipment vendor or trucking company. This SBA loan is also available for losses sustained since January 1st of this year, and the deadline to apply for it is also November 2nd. To apply, you can contact the Small Business Administration at 1-800-659-2955 or visit sba.gov/disaster. Businesses can learn more about preparedness at Ready San Diego.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Donnie Gentile, A.K. Jules, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.